Okay, so welcome back to another episode of Around the Ring, the podcast that talks about all the podcasts that are on the Leaving the Ring Network. I want to thank everybody that's been downloading this episode. Got a good reception from folks liking the show, so we decided to continue doing this. Now, not going to have a set date. I know some folks are asking about a set date, what's going to happen. Either happen on a Thursday or Friday or a Saturday or a Sunday. It's just how much content is available for us. But here on this segment here, we're obviously, we grab the best parts of every show, the best debates, topics, tweets, and phone calls, and we compile that in one show so you get an overall of what's going on in all the podcast shows. So let's roll with the punches on Around the Ring. Okay, well, first up is Andre Ward. Got his win over Sully Barrera at the Oracle Arena in Oakland, California. It was a performance, but he got the job done. And so now the big talks now is about a big showdown with him with the Crusher, Sergey Kovalev, down the road. A lot of folks hoping this is going to happen. You have reactions from fans of how the performance of Andre Ward did. You have reactions from fans of how excited they are if Kovalev and Ward seems to happen. But if there's a tune-up fight, certainly that was one of the topics. But let's tune in and hear what the next round had to say about Andre Ward's performance.
I was surprised he was marked up as much as he was. I don't know what that really means. However, Andre Ward, like most defensive masters, it is very difficult to land the initial punch. Whatever you do best, they'll take that away. And one of the ways you make up for that is you better start throwing a volume of punches, and it's not always right. The first punch that's going to land. And so if you throw a right hand after a jab, there's a very good chance that Andre Ward, as adept as he is at rolling the punch, he's going to shoulder that right hand, get his head on the other side.
Ring generalship, you can't question that. Some were saying flat-footed. I say flat-footed for a whole reason why. He had a really slow guy in front of him, but that slow guy was touching him with a jab. So that makes me worry a little bit about what's going to happen when Sergey Kovalev, if that fight happens, we're hoping it's going to happen. I got my fingers both crossed.
What I read is that they both have the option to take a fight before June, maybe push it back to July. And Sergey Kovalev, he's scheduled to go back to Russia and fight somebody out there.
The one thing that makes our podcast is popular and great are the callers. So let's tune in and really listen to what the callers had to say about either a tune-up or the performance for Andre Ward.
And look, as far as Andre Ward, he looked good against Sully Barrera. That was a good fight. I'm not going to call it a great performance. I'm going to call it a decent performance. He gave himself a B-minus. I would say about that, maybe even a C. I think he needs one more fight before he steps in with a Crusher, because if that fight were to happen today, I'm going to pick the Crusher. I need to see something more from Andre Ward to prove to me that he deserves to be in the ring with the Crusher, because right now the Crusher is the class of that division, and I think he rolls over Andre Ward if that fight happens right now.
I'm going to have to disagree with Ringside Robbie, Reluctant Roy Jones, and Motormouth Max. I don't want to see an in-between fight, man. How are you going to sell that, dude? How are they going to sell Andre Ward in another tune-up fight? You know, they already sold this fight with the idea that he's going to fight Kovalev, at least to me. I don't want to watch another fight Andre Ward and Kovalev, man. I just don't. Yeah, I don't see them selling that to anybody, man. I'm real impressed with Andre Ward. I think him and Kovalev will have a good fight. But like, I think you said earlier, Steve, I don't think it'll be an action-packed fight. I think it'll be more of like a chess game. I kind of lean towards Ward getting on the decision.
I'm disappointed in Barrera. I thought he put up a little bit more of a fight than he did. Just seemed kind of like he got psyched out and just was paralyzed in the moment. Yeah, so I was disappointed about that.
But let me bounce around here. We talked about earlier about Andre Ward. What do you guys think about this fight? I don't even know. Him against Bernard Hopkins in the summer.
You know, they already said, both of them, that they wouldn't face each other. I think they kind of killed that. Yeah, that they wouldn't do it. You know, they don't want to face each other. And I think that Bernard Hopkins is just looking for his last farewell fight. You know, he wants to ride out into the sunset. So I don't see that happening. I would have loved to have watched it a long time ago, but now.
I wouldn't watch that fight if you paid me. Good Lord.
What the hell was I thinking when I said that? That's just it. I wasn't thinking. Anyways, we have a new member added to the Leaving the Ring family, the Ringside Radio Show hosted by Dennis Taylor. Well, they had some few things to say about Andre Ward's performance. Let's take a listen.
You bet. Let me give you my take on this thing.
Sure, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
I need to have you talk me off the ledge again, once again,
okay,
on this Easter Sunday, okay?
All right, sure.
Andre Ward, to me, is absolutely amazing in his technical efficiency. It's something a true boxing aficionado or Andre Ward's mother can appreciate, and I certainly do, and the HBO TV crew absolutely gushed about him for 12 rounds. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I just don't see how this guy becomes a TV attraction with the general fight public. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. I have no doubt about that. But he's perfectly content to be dull as dirt as long as he wins. He's an all-time great that nobody is going to think about or talk about 20 years from now. I think, why should they? Ward and Virgil Hunter are so deeply in love with their artistry, and I can't blame them for it, but they absolutely refuse to let a fight break out. That's great strategy. It's a way to stay healthy, and Ward is the best I've ever seen at it, or one of them. But it's not what fight fans are interested in watching. So my take is, sorry, Andre, sorry, HBO, sorry, Max Kellerman, but that's where the rubber hits the road in boxing entertainment. Yeah, I think fans are going to tune in to watch him fight Sergey Kovalev, and I certainly am going to be one of them. But Kovalev is going to be the main attraction in that fight. Now, Travis, you're a professional boxer. Give us your take on the artistry of Andre Ward.
I think that you are so far off on Andre Ward. And I say this because of this.
Uh-huh.
Andre Ward, if I'm not wrong, guys, didn't Bob Arum say this to Floyd Mayweather? You will never be a fan attraction. Your fighting style is never going to be big. And then what is Floyd Mayweather? Floyd Mayweather goes and becomes one of the richest professional boxers of all time, selling the most pay-per-view sales of all time. And his style was thought to be very boring, which I agree that to the average fan, Andre Ward is that way. But he's going to be a major star. It's going to take him longer. But I think he is, and I think he already is, guys. Andre Ward, honestly, right now, is my current favorite fighter of all time right now. He genuinely is. I just like everything about the guy. I think he's going to be a huge star. I think the public is going to start to catch on.
This is when you start seeing the rest of the cast of that show starting to kind of fade away from him and stuff. Really slow. Travis, you might be the only one that's on that high right there. I don't know if the rest of us are with you on that one, brother. I think Travis forgot that Floyd Mayweather had to attach his name to other guys who are already stars to get that stardom and stuff. And let's not forget, the pay-per-views weren't that great when he did face up our opponents that didn't have a draw. Anyways, let's get back to the Andre Ward talk.
The president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Gents, how do you see Kovalev utilizing his jab against Ward? Also, what kind of opponent do you see Ward taking this summer? Now, Gabe, to answer the second question, Ward will face, I don't know. Will they take someone better than Sullivan Barrera? Is there someone at that level? Do you take on a Slava Shabransky, who has a Russian background, much like Kovalev? I think that'll be interesting. And I think it's very simple about Kovalev's jab. How will he utilize it, Gabe? A lot.
Early and often.
Yes.
For his sake, early and often.
Would only be Pascal and Butte. And those are two names that are really downhill. But those are the only two guys that I see that can draw a number if it was going to go to BT. And if Ward was looking to get that mega money that he's been asking for, those are the only two guys that he can draw in. But guess what? He wouldn't be able to fight him here in the States. He'd have to go to Canada to get that kind of money that he's looking for. Am I wrong here, guys?
Why not Andre Fonfara?
That's a great fight. I like that fight. I mean, well, Butte is busy. Yeah, he's fighting Badu Jack. I wouldn't mind seeing Badu Jack versus Andre Ward after he stops Lucien Bute. That's an interesting fight. But again,
yeah, it is an interesting fight. Yeah.
You know, and so you kind of go, can Rock Nation work with Al Haymon?
I go back to Paul Farrell. Yeah. The guy hasn't fought since last October. He has that win over Chavez Jr., so he is recognized somewhat. So, and I don't think he's a threat. I mean, I don't think he's a bigger threat than Sullivan Barrera to Andre Ward, because obviously HBO has to defend that fight card for the fall in November. They can't put somebody too dangerous, because then if they beat Ward, then that pay-per-view against Sergey Kovalev crumbles. So it's
right.
Got to be somebody that is recognizable like Sullivan Barrera, but not dangerous enough to ruin the party. And I think it's Fonfara. Make the call, David.
That's a great choice. Yeah, it's a great call.
Though that was one of the main topics for everybody's show, there was another fighter that really stood out on Saturday night's HBO card. Jojo Diaz. This kid was impressive. I was very impressed by him. And folks already started saying, where does he go from here now? Who's the next guy that Jojo Diaz should face? And then the big question was, does Jojo Diaz have power? Because that seems to be the concern that fight fans are having after witnessing his performance of him not able to get Jason Velez out with some of those big, big power shots that he landed on the head of Jason Velez.
But I think as his shortcomings go, there's only one, and I don't think it's a fatal flaw because he's so well-rounded, but I think he's going to lose a fight or two, which are going to be very close and very, very difficult to call. And I think the headstone might read, the epitaph, if he only had a little more pop.
It's almost like a Rocky Juarez, where there's all that technical skill. There's the fire. He kind of brings it every round, and there's a little bit of a star quality to him. JoJo's just kind of a star, the way he fights, just his whole vibe. But that finishing kick, he doesn't have the ability to put you away in that back end or just to suddenly stop you, catch you with the right shot. He's a technician, and he breaks you down.
He had a much more impressive HBO debut than the other up-and-coming featherweight, Oscar Valdez. You remember that fight against Ruben Tamayo. And you know, that's the fight to be made, not now, but in the future, between two featherweight stars, Jojo Diaz and Oscar Valdez. As far as who Jojo Diaz should face next and if it's going to be on HBO, how about Ronnie Rios?
That's a good fight.
Sacrifice the old guy for the new guy.
Yeah, I think that's a solid fight. And it's a guy with not a lot of power, but he's durable. He's got rounds to give. He's got experience to give.
You know, the thing about that fight, too, is that Ronnie Rios will come to the fight night to win. You know, and the Espinosas are never shy of putting their fighters in tough fights. We've seen that in the past. You know the thickness of this kid? I'm just wondering how long is it before he moves up in weight, because he's a really thick guy for that division.
That's going to be the tough thing, in that he doesn't really have that finishing punch. So, I mean, good Lord, he was landing that left hand.
So we all had our opinions about Jojo Diaz, who he should fight next. What about his power? Is it ever going to show up, or does it even exist? But like always, the callers call in to give us their opinion. Let's take a listen.
As far as Jojo, he looked good, but geez, could somebody tell Jason Velez to move his head every once in a while? Maybe he wouldn't have gotten hit with so many straight lefts.
Yo, man, I like this kid, man, Jojo Diaz. I think with Oscar promoting him and with him learning Spanish and knowing English, I really think he'll be marketable. And I can see him headlining HBO, you know, Boxing After Dark within, you know, next year or so.
After watching Jojo Diaz, you know, I give the kid, the young kid, young buck some props. He took Jason Velez, which is pretty dangerous. You know, he's a good fighter from Puerto Rico. And, you know, he beat him, probably 8-2, and he dominated the whole fight.
But let me give you guys an observation. This Jojo Diaz kid, holy cow, did he win some fans. You could, where we were sitting, you could hear the punches crack. I mean, it was pretty awesome. I mean, some of the body shots, you could hear them crack like no other fighter that night. It was very impressive. I don't know who this kid is, but he's one to watch. Huh.
Jojo Diaz is definitely one to watch. That is one prospect there that I'm excited to see. And I'm not alone. A lot of fight fans and a lot of people in the boxing industry are very excited about him. I'm pretty sure Golden Boy is jumping up in joy off the performance he had on HBO. Can't wait to see more from JoJo, and also can't wait to see if the power is there.
Coastal District be advised. We're receiving numerous reports of a 1050 suspect northbound near the Omega Power Station. All units in vicinity, please respond.
Yeah, it's confirmed. He's not stopping. Code 3.
Send me out some backup. Want to bring this guy down before he hurts somebody.
Well, it looks like Adrian the Problem Broner is starting to be a problem since a warrant was issued for his arrest last week, where he's accused of assault and aggravated robbery. It looks like some months ago, Broner was bowling, of all things, at some, obviously, bowling alley, and he was gambling. And then I guess he got into a little bit of some words with the guy that he was gambling with. They went outside, and allegedly Adrian Broner beat the crap out of him, beat the crap out of the guy, and then he got a gun, and he beat him with the gun, and then he...
Man, we just left bowling. That's why I'm still sweating and shit.
Was seen allegedly going through the guy's pockets. That's where the robbery comes in. And then he took off. The guy obviously went to the police. He ended up in the hospital. So now there is a warrant issued for his arrest.
Adrian Broner, AB, stands for About Bowling. Might soon be About Bail. And who knows, maybe in 10, 15 years About Bankruptcy. I love Broner. I cannot quit the guy, okay? I think he's a character. I don't know if he's actually just playing like this role. I don't know if it's like this Sacha Cohen Baron type of character that he's playing in real life to troll all of us. But he's now wanted in Ohio for violent burglary after a high-stakes bowling game gone wrong. But it looks like, Gabe, on PBC, he is going to be fighting Ashley Theophane this Friday night. The show must go on.
So for at least... this moment, like the PBC, Adrian Broner is free.
He must not know. I'm AB. I don't need no change, bruh.
You know the problem, Adrian Broner is in the news. Got a warrant issue out for him. He did fight. He did beat Theophane in the 9th round, and they had the gimmick with him and Floyd Mayweather doing the WWE stuff. But nevertheless, fans are concerned about him. Fans do want to see him. So we're going to listen to what some folks had to say on the next round.
Here, Adrian Broner, man, I kind of pull for him. I know he's kind of getting into a lot of trouble lately, but I just don't want to see, you know, what happened. I just recently watched the Maljit Taylor Chavez old fight, and I watched the story on Taylor. I don't want to see what happened to Maljit happen to Broner. I mean, just the way that things are going, it just looks like it could be heading towards that direction. I really hope somebody can let me, an old veteran, to come out and mentor this guy. He's got a lot of talent, and I'd hate for him to just end up, you know, behind bars or end up, you know, just losing it all. So I'm really pulling for him to beat Theophane this Friday. I want him to win by knockout, you know.
Other than that, and Adrian Broner is a train wreck waiting to happen. He's going to get by Theophane, but beyond that, you know, I don't know if he's world-class level anymore.
Who's back in the news is Sugar Shane Mosley. Had a caller call in the next round and ask about Sugar Shane. And then, of course, on Leave the Ring, we had a short discussion about the comeback of Mr. Sugar Shane Mosley. Take a listen.
What do you think with Shane Mosley? He had an announcement Saturday night. I'm not sure who he's fighting, but is he trying to get back into, like, a big title shot? Dave and Steve?
Yeah, he's fighting this unknown fighter that somehow ranked. It's for the WBA interim, and again, interim welterweight title. It's going to be on CBS Sports, I believe, in late May.
Shame,
you know,
shame
he
on
says,
the WBA.
Yeah, you know, he says don't call it a comeback, but in many respects it is. Me and Mario Lopez are going to have him on the podcast tomorrow. We can ask him more questions. But okay, he is under the belief that he is still a world-class player, and maybe getting one of these minor, somewhat JV belts helps him with that cause. But we'll see. Before he gets back into this level where he was once at years ago, he's got to show he could beat someone legitimately in the top 10.
Another thing, guys, you know, with Shane Mosley making a big announcement, and I heard him on the podcast yesterday with Steve and Mario. But I kind of root for the old guys that are, you know, where people always say, oh, it's over for them. And I kind of want – you think he would ever get a shot at – if he beats this guy coming up in May,
You think he's going after Cal Brooks' title?
Well, he probably is the only guy at that weight that would be gutsy enough to go do it.
Do it,
but
yeah.
He's also
known to say.
But the name that has to do that now because of the position that he's in, you know, he's wanting. And he's got something to sell, which is his name and his viability. You know, at some point, like, what do we need to see from Shane Mosley to know that he's done? Knocked out?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
But even
I mean,
Pacquiao was, and he's still fighting. And probably could for a few more years if we let him.
Yeah, but Pacquiao has shown that he has more activity in him than what Shane has shown. I mean, Shane is a one-handed fighter. He, you know, he really, I mean, he throws, what, maybe 10, 15 punches in a round. I'm wondering if he's going to throw a little bit more in this comeback fight here. I mean, Shane is at that point because desperation is a mutter effer, you know? Desperation of being great. We saw what he had to do with Balco. Now, desperation of staying irrelevant, look what he's slipping down low to, you know? And I'm not surprised by it, but I'm also not fascinated by it. You know, I like it. I like when fighters can be a little mouthy and stuff, but I also like the mouthy fighters that actually can produce that type of ruckus in the ring. And Mosley hasn't been able to show that for how many years now? You know?
Some really sad news in the boxing world. Nick Blackwell, who got in with Chris Eubank Jr., has went in a coma after receiving numerous blows to the head, where even senior Eubank had told his son, stop throwing punches to the head. This obviously sparked up a very long conversation about the safety for our fighters on everyone's podcasts. Let's take a listen to what some of us had to say about the situation and what some callers had to say about the tragedy that happened that night.
That fight had started to become one-sided. And when Chris Eubank Sr. in the opposite corner is openly questioning why this fight hasn't been stopped, that's kind of an indictment on Gary Lockett. And the other issue is, I checked the record of Nick Blackwell, who's a tough, rugged guy. There's no questioning his toughness. In 23, 24 fights, he doesn't even have double-digit knockouts. So one of the defenses that corners will have is that, hey, I got to give my guy a shot to win. We could turn it around with our power, with one punch. Seems to me, judging by what's on the paper and the track record of Nick Blackwell, that simply wasn't going to happen, and that was
wasn't going to happen.
Corners have to be more mindful of what their real objective is the actual night of the fight. Courageous corners are incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, great.
I don't understand what they were waiting for with that poor guy. That poor guy was just taking a beating at the end, and they wouldn't stop the fight until pretty much his face was deformed. I mean, that's just horrible.
You know, yesterday on Twitter, some guy said, well, first of all, I know Gary Lockett, and have you ever worked a corner? After blocking him, because I have no room, no use for that, did Gary Lockett, who I think's a good guy, I guess, I don't think he kicks puppies in his spare times, did he protect his fighter? No.
Not as far as I'm concerned, no.
Right.
He just let him get beat up.
There you go.
No.
And boxing has to do something about these trainers that don't pay attention to their fighters. You know, a guy like Gary Lockett, he may be a nice guy, but seriously, should he be allowed to continue training? I mean, isn't part of being a trainer paying attention to what you do in the corner?
Yeah, last I checked, Gabe, it is.
Going on, and the referee and the ringside doctor and the corner of the fighter not to see it, that is unacceptable.
That is very, very unacceptable, you know? That's the I think that's what stands out is those guys should be questioned and investigated because, you know, we've talked about this before. The signs of a fighter's body. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
why did
what I'm
the
saying.
Doctor there? Go over there and check the guy out with the freaking little light in the eyes? He must have seen something. He would have seen
something,
you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I think it comes down to is the same time as, like, I've always said this, is that it's just not fighters that show up and they get shell shock and they get, like, stumped and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do. Corners, same thing. They're tested on the highest level. Refs and doctors, same thing. I think they can get stuck on stupid where they just don't see anything because the atmosphere is so much for them that they freeze up, you know, and I think this is why we need to regulate and be more cautious of who we put as a third person for these fighters to protect them, because, you know, Blackwell showed that he was just too tough for his own good, and now look where he's at. You know, I mean, it's a tragedy, and it's really, really sad to see these guys, these brothers in gloves, for this to happen to them, you know. But I think our commissions and everybody else, they have to start really looking into the qualifications of ring doctors and refs, because not every Joe can do that job.
Are we looking at the boxer and the safety of the boxer, or are we looking at the entertainment level of the fight? You don't want to rob the paying audience and the people watching on TV of a great fight. Imagine if they would have stopped Corrales Castillo won in the seventh round because they were both beating the crap out of each other.
Right.
They wouldn't have had that fight, you know? But you can make a case of stopping that freaking fight because of what was happening inside that ring, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, yeah, definitely.
But I think that fight was a lot more competitive than Eubanks Jr. against Blackwell. It was, you know, and that you could kind of – you could see, and the referee, obviously Tony Weeks, could see a lot better than us, that these guys were okay until those last seconds when, you know, Castillo gets knocked out on his
– Now, to this day, I don't know why Tony Weeks didn't stop it with either of those knockouts or knockdowns. You know, it's like Corrales was – those were brutal. Both knockdowns were pretty brutal, like enough that his mouthpiece, he spits it out.
But he did step in, though, guys. I mean, when Tony Weeks saw Jose Luis Castillo's body go lifeless for that few seconds, that's when he did step in and said, okay, it's over. Where in the case where Daniel Corrales was – yeah, the eyes roll back. And see, and this is what I go off with experienced refs, you know. I mean, look, they're not going to get all the calls right. But when it's the obvious, and you're looking at a guy just taking a beating, and it's a one-sided beating, and you're just like, you're okay. And, I mean, Blackwell threw a punch here and there, kept his hands up, tried to land something. But there's got to be a given right there for that ref to already know that, listen, this is not going to go anywhere.
Hey, guys, this is Turk in Arlington. I really appreciate the discussion you're having. I missed a very important part of, you know, watching the sport and having to account for the kind of, you know, what goes on and reconciling that with facts that we enjoy. And the Klitschko against Peter, you know, on the undercard was Cotto against the Torres. And great. Cotto Torres, great fight.
Great fight, man.
Right. It's a classic.
Knockdowns everywhere. It made me a boxing fan for life. And that's the kind of fight where, you know, you just don't know. Had the insight to see that he was not done. It makes that Weeks performance stand out all the more, because, I mean, that was one of the great refereeing jobs of all time, which very, like, you razor's edge could have gone real bad. Really appreciate you guys taking the time on that topic. And, yeah, much prayers out to Blackwell and his family. And
all prayers to Blackwell and his family. Now, as you know, we have an all-dedicated female show that's part of the Leaving the Ring family, and it comes on every other Thursday. If you haven't had a chance to tune in and check it out, it's a must. It's a must. I mean, even if you're not a follower of the women fighters in the sport of boxing, there's some stuff on there that's very educational and some very interesting segments that they're having. I'm gonna play one right now that I thought was really interesting. The 2-minute rounds, women fighters want to be equal with men, the male fighters, so they're asking for 3-minute round fights. Take a listen.
Well, the theme is regarding whether pro female fighters should be fighting 2-minute rounds or 3-minute rounds, and pros and cons. I actually have no cons whatsoever. I feel that fighting is fighting, and there should be no difference whatsoever regarding women and men. See that, you know, it's women work just as hard and they fight just as hard, and I don't think that the fight game is any harder on our body than it is on a man's body, and we can keep up. And I think that, you know, now that New York, I believe, has accepted the 3-minute round, recently there was the first 3-minute fight, and it went well. So I just don't see what the problem is or why, you know, it's what's the difference. You know, women can fight 3 minutes just fine.
Well, one reason I'm in favor of it is because I think they'll get more knockouts with that extra minute. And when you're only 2 minutes, sometimes, you know, people can go full speed for 2 minutes, but they can't for 3 minutes, just like the guys. A lot of your knockouts come at the end of the round, toward the end of the round, not at the beginning, not too many. And I think that if females went to 3 minutes, they see a lot more knockouts. And let's be frank, most people want to see knockouts. And girls don't have as many because, in my opinion, 2 minutes is not enough time.
Especially in a championship fight. People need to get, women need to get that work in. You know, even if it's a 4-round fight, an extra minute can make a difference between a close fight and a fight that someone could obviously win. You know, you in 2 minutes goes by so fast that, you know, maybe some women could be slow starters in a round and finish the round really hard if they're used to sparring for 3 minutes. So I just really, really, really think that a 3-minute round is the best bet.
Some really interesting points made by the host of the 2-minute round, which is David Avila and Liz, as well as Felipe Leon. Now, if anybody has any questions and you want to ask anybody that any of the hosts of any of the podcasts, you certainly can. Send your questions to leavingthering@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at the various of different Twitter names that we have. I'm not going to mention them all, man. You should be following us already as it is. But anyways, tune in to the 2-minute round. Like I said, very good discussion. I'd like to hear the feedback from you guys. Should women go 3 minutes, or should it stick around for 2 minutes? Or are you going to be the Henry Ramirez guy that says, I just don't care. I don't care for women fighting. But I do, and I think that they're absolutely right in saying that if there was a minute added to that 2-minute round, you would be able to see more stoppages. But anyways, let's go to our final segment here on Around the Ring, which we like to call...
That's interesting. That is interesting. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, Oscar De La Hoya, the president of Golden Boy, basically said that the winner of Lemieux and Tapia would be facing the winner of Canelo and Khan. Nowhere near is Gennady Golovkin's name being mentioned as well. I mean, but here now we're seeing that they're kind of showing that they don't really need Gennady anymore. They got what they wanted with having Lemieux step in the ring, and that they see that now that they have Tapia – as well in the mix, they can continuously move on Canelo to just kind of veer them away from Gennady Golovkin. I mean,
and it makes perfect sense. That's why they're putting on the fight on the undercard of May 7th, David Lemieux against Glenn Tapia, and then the winner faces Canelo in another pay-per-view fight in September. But I'm actually just reading a quote right now on a Spanish language website that David Lemieux has actually said that it would, and I'm going to translate it, says it would be sensational to fight with Canelo, but I'm a middleweight and I'm not going to go under 160 pounds. Now, they say that they have to face each other to keep the belt, but if Canelo decides not to face Gennady Golovkin in September, when is that's the date that the WBC mandated the fight had to take place, then all they have to do is strip Canelo, and then he doesn't have to fight him to keep the belt. They just strip him, and that's what I'm waiting for. I want to see if the WBC is actually going to strip Canelo Alvarez.
But here's another thing: is if Lemieux saying that, well, I'm a middleweight, I'm going to fight here, and it wouldn't. I'm not really sure if that quote really stands true, because you know, if Lemieux's looking to get that title, which is the WBC again, and to get that money mega payday, the thing would be persuasive for him to go down that route is by going, okay, well, I'll do whatever. And because of the fact that Golden Boy represents him as well, I just don't see him having much room to say no to the Canelo fight.
Yeah, I don't know if people caught this because people kind of hate on Khan, but when Canelo put out a statement or gave a quote saying, you know, he didn't really want to put the middleweight title on the line, but Khan wanted to, so they did, and that's why they did 155, that he's really a 54 fighter. And Khan tweeted and quoted it and said, oh, really? And just made a bunch of emojis, like laughing. Because, you know, he didn't want to make a big deal out of it. The guy's got his fight. He was smart not to make a big deal out of it. But it's like, don't blame me for your bullshit.
I don't get what they're trying to do with them. I mean, there's only so... It's only for so long that you can market this guy as this commercial fighter. He's going to have to get into the trenches and get a bit dirty here. obviously Golden Boy are trying to make as much money as they can. The way I look at it too is that the criticism has to go to Golden Boy as well, because Oscar has advocated that, you know, he's going to save boxing, he's going to do this. By having Canelo fight guys that are not middleweights, you're not really helping boxing. You're really hurting the sport.
You know, I don't think that what Golden Boy is doing with Canelo Alvarez is necessarily hurting the sport. I think that Golden Boy Promotions, it's a company. It's trying to make money, and they have a fighter here that is very, very popular. If one of the most popular fighters in the sport right now that Mayweather, quote-unquote, retired. And, you know, I think that he might bring new fans to the sport, or he might make the sport a little bit more mainstream. Let me finish what I'm saying.
Okay, all right.
How long is it going to take for Alvarez to get good?
That's just it. Let me just reply back to Felipe really quick, okay? It does hurt the sport, because why can't you just traditionally bring up a guy the way it's always been done? Allow him to fight. If you want more fans and you want casual fans to be attracted to the sport, then what you do is you put on real fights. That's what the UFC has modeled. They modeled themselves on what boxing used to do back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. You know, I mean, even to the point, I mean, Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward, these guys were on the way, way out of their career. You know, these guys shouldn't be able to sell out, arenas or small stadiums. They shouldn't be able to do any of that. They're considered high-class club fighters. But guess what? When you put on good matches, it draws people. It does hurt the sport when you see one guy on pay-per-view being dominant of another dude, and it wasn't even exciting. It turns fans off. The fans that they attracted, guess what? The ones that came in, they just went right back out the door. That's what hurts boxing, Felipe.
Let me rebuttal, David, because I think you're absolutely 100% wrong. Because at the end of the day, the top of the food chain in boxing has always been a cult of personality. And it seems to me that you have forgotten the career of Mike Tyson. Who the hell did Mike Tyson fight when he was charging $50 for a pay-per-view and he was knocking out guys in 30
seconds? Mike Tyson was knocking
dudes
out in one round, though. Mike Tyson was knocking guys in one round. Canelo's fighting guys 12 rounds, and he can't even get a smaller guy out of there when he has them hurt. I mean, you can't compare Mike Tyson's KOs in 30 seconds to Canelo's 36 minutes of hoping that you're going to do something to a smaller guy that's ready to go. There's no comparison.
Hey, but thing is, it still makes money, because when you're at the Minute Maid Park, do you think the vendors at the Minute Maid Park in Houston wanted to see Canelo knock out James Kirkland in the third round? Or he wanted all those 40,000 Mexicans to keep drinking beer for another 7 or 8 rounds? You know, that's what they want. They want the guys to keep drinking the beer and buying the $5, $6 pizzas or tacos or whatever the hell they're selling at the Minute Maid Park. So this guy has everything working for him except, you know, skill, in the opinion of many.
The skill may be there. But I think that's the major question, is that because the fact that we haven't seen him in a real fight, because the fact that we haven't seen him with a real threat, because he's always having an advantage. We were close to it. I thought when he fought Lara, I thought that was his step of saying, okay, guys, I'm tired of you guys bagging on me about who I'm fighting and whom I'm avoiding. This is the step I'm going to. That was a great start for me to go, okay, this guy now wants to prove that he's a real Mexican fighter. But as soon as he got taste of that water again of like, damn, this is just a little bit too much, he went back into that shell by going, nope, I'm not going to do this. Now, granted, is it really him or is it the promoter? Is it his team? I don't really know. But to me,
I don't think it's him. I think it's the team. I think it's
I think so too.
I think it's Golden Boy. And quite honestly, dude, he's been in some fights. I mean, Austin Trout, former world champion, I mean, whatever the case may be, he was a world champion. And Eddie Zandizada, same thing, Cuban amateur, former world champion or current world champion. But to me, Canelo didn't beat those two guys in a dominant fashion. It was kind of close. It was kind of controversial. I had those two fights to draw, you know. So that's the part where people say, oh, he got a gift. He got a gift decision there. But if you would have knocked him out or beaten him convincingly, I don't think we'll be having this conversation about
Canelo.
No,
we wouldn't. No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't be having this conversation, you know.
And then the other fight.
And he also
was
not the kind of guy that he's looking at it and going, you know, it's close. I better just turn on, you know, hit the Mexican switch and just start going for it and knocking these guys out. Like De La Hoya against Quarte. You know, I actually still have Quarte winning that fight, but he went for it at the end. He knew he needed something big. He went out and he got it. And I don't get a sense of that kind of magic from Canelo. That's my thing with him, that kind of aggression, that desire to be great. He just looks like, you know, I'm making millions of dollars and I'm fighting guys I should be beating. There's a couple tough ones, but, you know, Lara and Trout aren't exactly knockout artists, so they're like calculated risks. And you know, I give him props for fighting them. They're both very close fights. But I think that's also the thing that keeps him out of the public's, you know, heart, is that he just doesn't give it up. He doesn't let it all hang out.
I wonder.
Leave it in the ring.
No, he doesn't leave it in the ring at all. And I wonder because.
Okay, that's the end of our show here on Around the Ring. I want to thank everybody that tuned in and listened to the show. Be sure to check it out next week. And don't forget, every Monday, the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Every Tuesday, you got Felipe Leon and In the Square Circle, your 30 minutes or less boxing news. Every Wednesday, the flagship show, Leaving the Ring, with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, and always rotating hosts that come on the show. Then you got Lenny the Fight Smith with the technical draw. He's got a show coming up pretty soon. And then you got the 2-minute round, the all-dedicated female show. And on Fridays, you got Full Court Press, and on Sundays you got the Ringside Show with Dennis Taylor. Again, this is your host David Duenas, and if you have any questions or you have any shouts out or you have any rants or whatever the case is, you want to talk to us, you can always email us at leavingthering@gmail.com. again, you guys stay safe and thanks for tuning in.